Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bulls and James Forsyth. So Katie, it's been quite a big news day today as the leader of Scottish Labour has resigned, Richard Leonard, maybe someone who listeners don't know much about. Can you fill us in?
So Richard Leonard has resigned as the leader of Scottish Labour, and I think to probably put it in context, this is something I think many of Keir Starmer's allies have been dreaming of happening sooner than it has. Richard Leonard is an Englishman who is the leader of Scottish Labour. I don't think that is the main criticism of him, but he was someone on the Corbyn wing of the party. He was elected when Jeremy Corbyn was leader and picked as that leader. And since then, I think there's been concerns over his leadership for a few reasons. Firstly, there have been those who are more centrist who don't want someone from that side of the party to be in charge of Scottish Labour. And then secondly, I think there are those who thought, even if you put, you know, what faction you are aside, they just did not think he was the type of leader who should be front and centre and had what it took to, you know, take votes from the SNP or even keep Labour votes and stop them from going to the SNP, because Scottish Labour has not been doing well in the polls. And you can put it down to lots of reasons, but I think it was a pretty wide felt feeling that Richard Leonard was not the asset that they needed. So he has resigned. I think the question is now who is going to take over. And I think it's worth bearing in mind that Keir Starmer has been talking a lot more about the union recently, devolution. You have Gordon Brown advising him. So I think the type of candidate they will want to step in is going to be much more of that ilk. And with Gordon Brown, I think, closely advising Keir Starmer, being quite close contact with him, it'd be interesting to see how they use this, because it will be viewed as a big opportunity, particularly with Scottish Parliament elections coming out, where they take place in May or further down the line, seen as an opportunity for the unionist side. Because quite frankly, Richard Leonard was not seen as an asset. And then Boris Johnson, as UK Prime Minister, is seen as problematic from unionists, including those on the right. So can you get someone who can help spearhead that movement? And crucially, there is a sense that if you are going to have a, you know, pro-unionist movement, whether that's to stop a second independence referendum or to make sure when you eventually get there, you have a stronger case, it can't just be on the right. You need someone who on the left can win some of the left-wing votes, people who are never going to vote for the Tories. So again, I think this is the question of, is this the vehicle to do that?
James, as Katie says, Scottish Labour hasn't been doing well for some time now. Does Keir Starmer have any good options for who would take the leadership after Richard Leonard?
So Anna Sawa and Monica Lennon are the two names being touted this evening, and I think it, for the reasons Katie says, but both would be an improvement on Richard Leonard. The problem was he's been Scottish Labour leader for quite some time now, and he's simply not cutting through with voters. Now, Scottish Labour's problems go back to the 2014 independence referendum and the general election route for them that followed in 2015. But as Katie argues, if Scottish Labour can't revive, it's very difficult to see how the union can be saved. That's one reason why it matters. Another reason for Keir Starmer is that he can't make it into Downing Street without getting back some Scottish MPs. And if you look at one of the things that has happened to Labour in every election campaign since 2014, which is whenever the election has looked close and there's been the prospect Labour have been tripped up on this question of whether they would do a deal with the SNP to take power at Westminster. So he really does need a revival in Scottish Labour for his own political fortunes. And I think Katie raised an intriguing question here. You know, what role is Gordon Brown going to play? Now, I wouldn't expect him to come back as leader of Scottish Labour. I would expect him to be the most likely person to lead the unionist side in any second independence referendum. But I think his view on who should take on this job will carry a lot of weight in the Labour Party, both north and south of the border.
Meanwhile, while one leader steps down, another leader's position is being threatened, Katie, today by a usual suspect, Steve Baker. Can you tell us what's happened?
Yeah, one of the regular government tormentors-in-chief. We have Steve Baker, who has issued a message to fellow members of the COVID recovery group. The COVID recovery group is made up of Tory MPs who are very sceptical of lockdown measures, in the past have called against lockdown. lockdown. Interestingly, at the third lockdown, they did not oppose that lockdown per se. They changed tack. So they said that instead they would support this, but let's talk about, you know, an exit plan for vaccinations, and they moved their focus there. Now, Steve Baker's message is touching on, I think, where we have an issue in terms of parliamentary management or just general government strategy and how it's being communicated, is that the government and ministers do not want to talk about a timescale on lifting restrictions at all. They don't want to go near it. And you see that in various ways. You see it when Matt Hancock was recently interviewed on Sky News, and I think the presenter, Neil Paterson, said, well, lots of your colleagues think, you know, restrictions are going to go from the 8th of March. And Matt Hancock said, well, I haven't said that, and I'm the health secretary. So asserting himself, but they don't want to go near dates. But in the meantime, people who are willing to go on the airwaves are government scientists. So you have Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Professor Van Tam. He told The Sun, we could be in a lockdown till the spring. There could still be lockdown measures. Secondly, you also had Neil Ferguson suggesting twice now, and one in a print interview, one on a broadcast, that we could hopefully have most restrictions gone by the autumn. Now, that is a world away from what most Tory MPs are thinking. If you're saying by September we only have one or two restrictions, that is very far removed. And not just your Steve Bakers, I would say a large chunk of the Tory party do not think you have restrictions in May with the current vaccination programme. And I think what Steve Baker's message is saying is that we're already hearing lockdown could be in the spring. What we need is to have an exit strategy. And if we don't, it will move from a debate about vaccines to a question of Boris Johnson's leadership. So the clear implication of this is, if you don't do what we say, your leadership is at risk. Do we think Boris Johnson's leadership is at risk? I think it is premature right now. I think that if you look at that tiny rebellion in the last lockdown, the focus of most MPs, particularly when we saw yesterday the highest daily death toll yet of over 1,500, is not on having this debate about lockdown and questioning the strategy. However, I do think this is a debate that's going to become more intense, so it's a sign of things to come. And I think that it's going to be increasingly difficult for Boris Johnson and his government to hold this position that they're not going to get into specifics on dates. I think that is not going to be, you know, a fringe opinion of Tory MPs. That is going to grow in urgency. So it's a warning shot, but I think it's also just a reminder of, if they don't move at all, this is going to be the big debate of the next few months. And I don't think the current government strategy, and yes, it's very hard to predict, but I think they're probably going to have to give a bit more.
James, as Katie says, recently the COVID recovery group has sounded a little bit more moderate on their views on lockdown. Mark Harper just asked for a vaccination schedule rather than opposing the lockdown completely. So do you think others in that group are looking at the Steve Baker comment and thinking that he went a bit too far, perhaps?
I think some people obviously question the timing, given that the kind of current infection numbers, hospitalizations and deaths. But I think Katie's analysis is spot on. What the argument in the Tory party is going to shift to this question of, when can you ease up the restrictions? Now, the vaccination numbers today suggest that, you know, close to 250,000 people were vaccinated in the last 24 hours. That is moving you closer to that around 300,000 a day you would need to hit the government's target of vaccinating 13.5 million most vulnerable people by the middle of February. And I think the more people are vaccinated, the more Tory MPs will start saying, well, hang on a second, why are we not easing up restrictions? Now, this government, having got into trouble repeatedly for kind of over-promising and under-delivering, or saying that things were going to ease up and then having to tighten things up again, is very keen to avoid committing to any things. But as Katie says, it's quite clear, now Steve Baker has gone early here, but it is quite clear that a lot of Tory MPs want some firm date. They want to be able to say to their local businesses, this is when you will be able to reopen.
And Katie, finally, today is also the day that Grant Shapps has announced the travel ban on Brazil and nearby countries, not for British nationals, but for other people. Too little, too late?
I think a lot of people think that. I mean, I think the government's approach to borders throughout the pandemic has been hard to sometimes find the logic of. Even whatever side you take, I think there's been a lack of consistency on it. And for example, we didn't close borders in the first lockdown. And then when we eventually did, people said, well, why now, when you wouldn't have made more sense to do it earlier? And I think we even saw it today. So with, for example, this negative test to get into the UK, no matter what country you are coming from, I think that, oh, when is that coming into effect? It's going to come into effect on Monday. And she's like, there's no urgency at all, is there? Like, there is just a sense that the government really takes its time on this. And I think it's for a few reasons. I think the economy is one, in the sense that we are, particularly in London, an international hub in terms of flights. I think the Brazil decision was another example of this. People said, do you really need a COVID-O meeting before you decide on this? Surely you just take the decision, decide later, like as they have done in a few cases, not related to borders. But ultimately, I think once they have that system in place, I think at least then we do have a strategy for this, and it's one that lots of countries have done first. I think that you have to accompany it by the quarantine as well. I think in the question of countries with these new strains, so South Africa, Brazil, you can still fly indirect from quite a lot of these places. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are certain rules if you're a UK national, it's easier to come back. But I still think it's a bit of a sense that they are moving slow and not taking as stringent measures as some other countries. And we all know from all the polls, stricter measures at the borders do have quite a lot of public support.
So James, what accounts for this inconsistency, delay? I mean, it seems like there's still no strategy as to the border almost a year on from the pandemic hitting our shores.
Yeah, I think we need to learn from those countries like South Korea and Taiwan that have handled this virus much better than us. And they have much stricter processes at the border for dealing with this. I think this is another example of kind of the UK being slightly caught on the hop in terms of its pandemic planning. I think one consolation about this new Brazilian strain is that because lots of vaccine trials, including AstraZeneca's for the Oxford vaccine, were conducted in Brazil, that should help provide some evidence quite early on the vaccine's efficacy against this new Brazilian strain.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes, and do join us again for our next episode. Also, if you enjoy this podcast, why not come work with us? There's a new vacancy for a third podcast producer, along with myself and Max Jeffrey. You can find out the details at www.spectator.co.uk/producer. Please don't send in your CV, but we've got a few fun tasks for you. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.